There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the biggest stories in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, can the two giants of Milan get going when the going gets tough in this year's Champions League? Will this season at last be different, or will Inter once again pull the trigger and shoot themselves in the foot? Will it be ciao or arrivederci? Nice to see you, to see you nice to Milan for the knockouts. Also, don't call it a homecoming, the return of Lewandowski to Bayern, but without his golden boot. Should Barca be unduly concerned? And how the top players in European football are getting away with a please release me, let me go clause in their contracts. Nicky, what a win for Napoli. Two wins out of two in the Champions League.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Napoli Rangers game. It started off as such a temper, and Luciano Spalletti had this wonderful turn of phrase at the end of the game. He said that the atmosphere at Ibrox had been like being inside a toaster. It was so hot, so he was stuck between the two heating elements on either side. But it was really, really sort of super high intensity game to start off with. I think it felt like Rangers thought maybe they could overwhelm Napoli with that, and I think it's a very sort of culturally British idea of how you beat the Italians is just get in their faces and be fast, be more physical. And I think actually it could have worked against lots of Serie A teams, but I think Napoli have shown that they're not afraid to mix in that sort of environment very quickly, despite being knocked off course a few times. They were moving the ball around very sharply. And look, they got some breaks in the end because, of course,
well, they got three penalties,
and then retaken.
Yes.
And it took the third one. The thing is that all of them were correct, actually, in the end. You know, that both penalties were fouls. There was encroachment on the area. I suppose the retake was the most questionable just because players from both teams were encroaching at the time. But I think Napoli very much deserved it in the end. And the sort of the sending off, which was probably as critical as the penalty for Sands, was the right decision. But they've been a lot of fun to watch, Napoli, in the Champions League. There's two games and both of them have been two of my favourite games just from an entertainment standpoint so far in this year's competition.
Yeah, Andy, what about Sporting smashing Spurs? It's going to delight, of course, one or two people on the other side of North London, i.e. Nicky Bandini. But can we concentrate, forget the result, can we concentrate on this Marcus Edwards boy that you've been talking about and raving about for quite some time? Is he really the new Messi?
Well, if Pochettino says so, I guess he is. I mean, it's funny how that was used as a way to frame how highly Pochettino thought of him and how he might have struggled with expectations before kickoff. And then he goes and nearly scores a Messi goal at the end of the first half. I think Hugo Lloris broke a few hearts by saving that because it would have been an aesthetically perfect goal. But, you know, we talked, I think, last week about how one of the Portuguese papers said he's not a false nine, he's a real nine, which is remarkable to say about someone who's 5'6", but, you know, he's got such strength, control, balance. But it wasn't just about him. I think you're looking at a Sporting team that is brilliantly coached by Ruben Amorim, who, as I was saying to Marcus, and Marcus mentioned on the ramble earlier this week, I think he's going all the way. I think he's going to be one of the best coaches in the game. You know, he lost his central midfield of Palinha and Matias Nunes to the Premier League at the start of the year. And he's just having this little rebuild. You know, they lost Pablo Sarabia as well, who Edwards is nominally taking over from. And I think we're seeing now more and more how, we'll come to another Portuguese side a little bit later, how much physically stronger the top Portuguese teams are, because for them to stay with Spurs for the whole 90 minutes and then score the two goals right at the end, I don't think a Portuguese team is capable of doing that 5 years ago. Whereas now they've got that extra physical edge to compete with Premier League teams, which is really impressive.
Yeah, Nicky, let's start with the fortunes of the two Milan clubs. Okay, they've won their latest matches in the Champions League, but are you convinced?
You're not the first person to ask me about this, and I think it's sort of really sort of hard to talk about these things without zooming out quite a bit. There's the very big picture, which is, look, bluntly, money talks. The Italian sides that were dominant two decades ago or a decade and a half ago, it's more like 2 decades ago now, really, more than 2 decades ago, actually, when I think about it. Gosh, the years rattle on, don't they? Those were bankrolled by people with hundreds of millions of euros. You know, they were bankrolled by your Marattis, by your Berlusconis, by your whoever it would be for whichever club. But those are the two Milan clubs. And those people made things possible. I think if you want to then sort of step out of that sort of very broad big picture and talk about the two Milan clubs specifically, well, look, they both went through these sort of, I think post those owners, they both went through slumps. And there were sort of details along the way of exactly how and when those slumps hit, which varied between one and the other. Obviously, with Inter, you could say maybe it wasn't a post-Moratti slump, it was post-Mourinho slump, which is a very classic sort of thing to happen to Mourinho clubs, is he came in, squeezed every last drop out of them, and then as soon as he was gone, it was a period of decline that followed. But certainly when those two owners moved on and both clubs went into new phases, things got more difficult, and each of them missed the Champions League for, I think, 7 consecutive years. Not the same 7 years, but both of them had 7 year periods without the Champions League. And then you could say, oh, well, then they came back and the results weren't great. Well, part of that is a chicken and egg situation, because look at the groups they were thrown into when they came back from those 7 year absences. You know, Inter came back in to a group that, oh, I can't remember who the other team in the group was, but they had them and Tottenham in the same group. And actually them and Tottenham finished on the same points in that group. And it was decided on away goals in the head-to-head matchups. The next year, I think they had Barcelona. It was Barcelona both times. The next year was Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund. And they did beat Dortmund once. They didn't get through the group. So we can get granular about it and say, well, Inter, their coefficient got hammered while they were out for 7 years. They came back and it was tough sledding coming back in. And then perhaps after that, if we want to bring it back to your issues in North London, Dutton, after that, as they got back on top of Italian football, they had a manager named Antonio Conte, who, brilliant as he is domestically, has been serially poor in the Champions League. And that goes back to his time at Juventus and everywhere else he's been. I think he's only had one quarter final in 11 or 12 attempts in the Champions League. So you can get into that part of it. For Milan, look, their comeback to the Champions League was last season. And last season, in their debut game against Liverpool, so away at Anfield, they came back. They had, I think, six players out of 11 who had never played a Champions League game before. And I actually thought in that game specifically, they performed really well, given all that. Okay, there were periods when they were a bit overrun, but then they came back, they led Anfield, they shocked Liverpool a little bit. And I think that's the granular side of things, right? Those clubs have been through specific stories of their own that have ups and downs along the way. And what's interesting is between the two of them, it's Milan who are more recently back in the Champions League, and Milan who I currently have much more optimism for, because yes, while both of them won this week, it's Milan who I could imagine getting through to the knockout phase much more readily than I can Inter.
Yeah, let's get a dispatch on this from our man in Warsaw.
Well, I just wanted to ask Nicky actually about, I mean, I think Milan are the more attractive side. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you can see the fact that there's a ceiling there that they're going towards, which is quite high. It feels like they're a team that's growing together. But I wanted to talk about, you talked about being out of the Champions League for a long time and that lack of experience. Of course, what Inter benefited from this week was the experience of Edin Dzeko, 36 now, no Lukaku at the moment. As Dotton says, I was watching all the games on Tuesday night in a bar in Warsaw, and someone was saying, I think on Polish television, Dzeko continues his incredible record against Pilsen. And you're like, didn't he play in Czech football? I think that is kind of a leg up to that good record. But he did have a really good game, and what he offers is more than goals. And you know, people say it again and again and again about, say, Olivier Giroud, or going a bit further back, Teddy Sheringham, someone who never had lightning pace in the first place, and so as their brain develops, and they were always quite sort of cerebral players, their game develops even more, and he's not far from being as good as he ever was.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say not far from being as good as he ever was. I mean, he was never a fast player, and I understand where you're coming from on that. Like, when you've got someone who wasn't ever basing the game around pace and explosiveness, then you're not going to lose that as you get older. And I suppose you could draw a comparison with someone like Teddy Sheringham, maybe, who was a slightly different kind of a centre forward, but nevertheless was someone who didn't rely on that part of their game so much, and was, I think, similar to Dzeko, a very generous player. I think Dzeko is still underestimated a bit in what a generous player he is and how much he plays for the team. But there's sort of still a second side to that, which is Dzeko's in that team last night and in general in this Champions League group because there's no Lukaku, and no Lukaku is going to be the sort of big reason, I think, if he ends up, his sort of return is still not entirely clear what day he's coming back, but it's going to be a major factor in Inter's chance of getting through this Champions League group, because it is a very, very tough group again. They've got Bayern Munich and they've got Barcelona. They've already got thumped quite comprehensively by Bayern Munich. And Lukaku was the headline signing this summer. Lukaku was the one who was supposed to bring back the glory days of winning the league. I say glory days, only one season ago, but still, the that sort of quality up front that they had. and not having him is a big blow. And I do think it's one of those other sort of many interesting threads about timing, a much more sort of close up thread on timing than what I was just talking about with the big picture of the last decade and more, is that this Champions League group stage is so condensed, again, because of the World Cup, like so many other things, it's all got to get done by early November. And, you know, I was thinking about this with Juventus as well and Pogba being out. In another year, you might have hoped to get some of these players back for a couple of games at the end of the group. And are you going to get them back in time to have an impact is I think, going to be a really, I don't know, a defining question for some teams this season.
There's been a lot of correspondence on social media for us, not about Inter and Milan as much. Do feel free to contact us anytime during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Nicky Bandini. Yeah, it's the other big team. Well, there are several, I know, before you smack me down, Nicky, but it's the other big, huge historical team in Italy that a lot of the correspondence has been about. Christopher on Instagram says, why is Allegri doing so much worse this time around? Is it him or Juve? Niall on Instagram says, do Juve sack Allegri now and get Tuchel ASAP? Well, you tell me, because they went down to a shock defeat, didn't they? Or is it shocking?
I think it is because it's at home. And maybe that sort of impression of Allianz Stadium being this sort of impenetrable place where they should be able to get results even in Europe is being shattered a bit now. And I think I put this on Twitter last night, that they've won 4 of their last 10 games at home and they've lost both the last 2 in Europe, the last one being an absolute thrashing 3-0 to Villarreal. So it's definitely lost some of its mystique very quickly, that Allianz Stadium, which used to be such a fortress for them. But it's a real sense of everything unraveling and why is it going so badly for them? Gosh, I was very much in the camp that expected Max Allegri to be an effective solution for them. Like, I thought Max Allegri coming back after a year of Sarri and a year of Andrea Pirlo would be sufficient. He would get them back on track. He would make them probably not that interesting to watch, but he knows how to win games and how to work in that environment. He understands the ethos of the club better than perhaps Sarri does, and he's just a better manager than Andrea Pirlo was. But so far, he really just hasn't been able to do it at all. And I think this summer was really, last season, I think he could get away with saying, well, the team has changed while I was away, I haven't got the players I need, and it needs to be fixed. This summer, the club does go out and gets him this sort of international forward of experience in Di Maria. They go out and get him Pogba now. Pogba, of course, has been absent, which is a big deal. That was a box-to-box midfielder you really wanted, and Pogba isn't there. But they go out and get him Pogba, and they go out and get him Paredes as well, who was a really sort of important figure in midfield to be giving some amount of that Ajisa quality that they've been missing. And they got Bremer to replace De Ligt, and I think that's at least sort of a similar quality of centre-back, so you shouldn't have lost too much there, at least on performance. De Ligt had all that potential, but did he ever go beyond the levels that Bremer produced last season for Torino? I don't know if he did. So he has been given what he wanted in a great way, and it's still not working. Now, funnily enough, this comes back to what I just said before, which was, you know, timing matters. And I think if you look at Max Allegri's most effective seasons at Juventus, very often you see a team that evolved through the season. Very often you see that the best football was played in the second half of the season. He is someone who will change his tactics as he goes. He always talks about being not like a very academic sort of thinker. He very much goes on instincts, goes on his sort of his ideas that come into his head, and that has served him well in his previous time there. And what he said about a week ago now was, look, there's going to be 2 seasons this season. There's going to be the season before the World Cup, and there's going to be a new season after the World Cup. So we just need to get to the end of this season, the one that ends in November, within striking distance, basically, right? Like, we just need to be close enough. And then after the World Cup, you're going to see a different season anyway, and we're going to come together. Well, 0 points from 2 Champions League games does not put you in position to strike, and you're not going to have time to wait until after that November anyway to get out of this group stage. And I think it's really unraveling frighteningly fast for them. And, you know, yesterday, before the game, Arriva Bene, who's the chief executive, was doing a few photos and conversations with fans after a meeting with the Benfica executives. And it was all sort of good natured, but one of them said, you know, basically Allegri out to him. And he said, okay, you're going to pick up the tab for the next manager then. And, you know, he sort of tried to like shrug that off afterwards and I was just joking and all the rest of it. But Allegri is under contract till 2025 and he has a €7 million a year contract. And Juventus are, if he's not the answer, they're in a pickle.
But Nicky, the manager seems to be getting a lot of the flack. Is he the problem or is it the team? Is it Allegri or Juve?
I do have some sympathy for him because I do think that if Pogba is there and if Chiesa is there, this team looks dramatically different. I think that's two players you could put into that team who immediately make it look very different. And Chiesa has been a really long-term absentee that has been a major loss for Juventus. That you think about how good he was at the Euros and then to lose him for most of last season, to still not have him back this season, that's a big blow for any club. But I think as a manager who has been in Champions League finals, who has won five league titles in a row, and who is inheriting, frankly, what was supposed to be this sort of low point from the previous two managers where they'd only won the league under Sarri and then only kind of gone out, what was it, last 16 under Andrea Pirlo and Sarri in the Champions League. Well, they didn't win the league under Allegri last season. They went out in the last 16, probably more embarrassingly than they did under the previous two managers, given that 3-0 home defeat. You got given a €70 million striker in January in Dusan Vlahovic to fix some of your problems. All right, Pogba's out, but you still were given Di Maria, Paredes. I think it's reasonable at this point to say, what have you done to make them better? Like, why is this team not performing better? Why have they got only 2 wins in 6 Serie A games so far this season? And sure, if you ask me sort of my honest sort of expectation, I think if Allegri stays there till the end of the season, I think by the end of the season, things will be better. I think they'll have those players back. And I think Allegri will do what he always does and make things better along the way. Do I think he's doing good enough for a manager of his sort of wages, of expectations that are put upon him, on the amount of support that he's been given? No, I think he isn't, no.
I think that's an interesting question when you look at how the teams are actually coached, because especially in this game against Benfica, and let's be clear, Benfica didn't nick this game. They really deserve to win, I think. And it sounds like such a simple thing to boil it down to, but I think confidence and coaching really shone through in this and the difference between the two teams. Now, Benfica are in a good place. After this, they've won all 12 games this season, which is an incredible start to the season, which outstrips what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago when they matched that Sven-Göran Eriksson start to the season. That you know, is already their best start in 40 years. And I think if you could like boil it down to one moment, the bit that actually let Benfica back into the game just before half time, when Miretti makes that really daft foul in the penalty box. Now, he's young. I accept that. Young players make mistakes. But then again, you look at Antonio Silva on the other side, 18-year-old, centre-back. I think in previous times, you think, well, he's been sort of sent into the lion's den, really. Juventus away in the Champions League. He was really composed. He was really great. And I think that says a lot about Roger Schmidt and the confidence that he gives this team. You know, Enzo Fernandez in midfield, he wasn't even in European football a couple of months ago. You know, it's a team that I thought played with confidence, like they expect to win, like they deserve to be there. And, you know, I still think they're not favourites to go through this group. I think we have to wait and see. But that they've put themselves in a position where they're 6 points in front of Juventus. That's an incredible start. I guess the question is, going back to the Tuchel question, you know, what would that be able to do immediately? I suppose if you're looking at it from it from a Champions League perspective, like the way in which Tuchel not just immediately improved Chelsea in a Champions League context, of course getting them all the way to winning the trophy when they didn't even look contenders, but the fact that he managed to do that with the existing players by getting the best out of players who weren't quite doing it. You know, Antonio Rudiger was considered like an inconvenience by Frank Lampard and he wanted to get rid of him from the squad, and he, you know, Tuchel helps him become one of the best centre backs in Europe, and you know, he's just indicative of a number of players who were brought up really from a level to a much much higher level. Then that's interesting. And look, I know people moaned about Tuchel fixing the defence and said that made him a defensive coach, which I never think is quite right, by the way. No one's complained about that at Juventus, let's be clear.
Well, I mean, do you think people aren't complaining about defensiveness at Juventus? I think they are right now, but they'd be happy enough if it was defensiveness that worked. That's the difference. Yeah, no, Allegri took Juventus to Champions League finals, playing at times sort of football that relied on being very solid at the back. And I think that's one of the sort of many condemnations that's coming his way at the moment. And there's some footage that's doing the rounds in Italy this morning that is it's open to interpretation because it's not very clear. It's two players talking on the pitch, but Di Maria was caught on camera speaking to Milik after the game, and he's sort of asking por qué, and he's doing a gesture with his hands that suggests substitution. And the inference in Italy has been that he was asking Milik, you know, why has the manager taken you off when we needed you on, when we needed, you know, you to be getting that goal for us? And that sense with Allegri has followed him around, I think, even since that successful era at Juventus, that when he was in that successful era, it was because he was able to say, well, we won't play expansive football, we'll keep it tight at the back. And hey, I happen to have Bonucci, Buffon, Chiellini and Barzagli, one of the best defences European football seen in the modern era, to fall back on and defend those 1-0s. And Juventus can't play like that anymore. Pero Italia sueña con la Copa. Gilardino, Dal Piero, Dal Piero, Dal Piero, gol! Dal Piero, gol! Dal Piero, gol! Gol! E a sognar! E a sognar Italia con levantar la Copa!
By the way, the keen-eared amongst you might have heard that there, one of us is in an airport, and on his tour of the Champions League across the continent, next week we'll be asking, where is Andy Brassel at this week? I'll give you a clue. Dzień dobry, jak się masz, and don't forget those Polish pierogies. Don't eat too many of them. Anyway, I think one of the highlights of this week's Champions League fixtures was Bayern versus Barcelona, featuring, of course, the return of the goal-scoring Don Lewandowski back to his home turf. But it didn't turn out like he would have wanted, did it, Andy?
No, it didn't. And watching it with some people who cover the Bundesliga, there was a little twitch of Lewandowski and big games in the Champions League. Now, I don't know if this is a big game because of the narrative rather than the actual context, because ultimately it's only a second group stage game of six in the Champions League, and Barcelona losing this, especially with what Nicky was saying about Inter, it's not necessarily fatal to their Champions League hopes. I think when you get a game like Bayern versus a good Barcelona, and this was a good Barcelona, there's no doubt about that, and they're getting somewhere. It's only really posturing at this stage in the Champions League. You know, you normally know that the best teams are going through, so it's their best opportunity to show that they're in some sort of form to be serious about the competition this year. And I actually felt that both teams did that, really, because Barcelona were the better team in the first half. It's clear that they're a way different proposition than they were in the group stage last season. Step away a minute from the sustainability of what they've done in the transfer market this summer. There's hope there. I think from a supporter's perspective, that's all you can hope for. They played aggressive, energetic football in the first half, and Bayern couldn't get out. I thought they were a bit careless losing the ball in midfield. part of that obviously was to do with Barcelona's press.
I think to sort of come back to Lewandowski, which is inevitable, but yeah, this idea that he sort of dropped away in a big game. I mean, I think in the first half of that game, I was reading from the Athletic's numbers this morning, he had a higher expected goals than the entire Bayern Munich team in the first half of that game. So the idea that he wasn't sort of contributing, he wasn't dangerous, I think, you know, it wasn't just when he was shooting as well, like that was just his shots, the expected goals for him, but he also was a big part of that high press you mentioned, Andy, and keeping them sort of hemmed in. So I thought Lewandowski actually had quite a good game, and sure, like, of course, strikers going to be judged by their goals, but I think it would be a bit wrong to write that off as going that way.
But the second half changed it, and the second half was a second half that Julian Nagelsmann needed, because Bayern have had their worst start to a domestic campaign in 12 years. Now, we're not talking Juventus style here. They're unbeaten. They've drawn the last three, so that represents their worst Bundesliga start in 12 years. It's remarkable. And, you know, there's been a lot of chat about, you know, how they find some sort of, not so much equilibrium on the pitch, but equilibrium in terms of hierarchy post Lewandowski. Because, of course, immediately when he goes, you think, how do you replace the goals? Well, that's never really been a question for Bayern, because they've got so many other players who can score goals. Mane's come in, Musiala's started the season absolutely off the chain. Leroy Sané is in great nick, etc., etc. But what it does create is a situation that when Lewandowski's playing, you know what the team is most of the time, and you know who the main goal scorer is. But now there's that vacuum, that sort of power vacuum to be filled. And you have maybe four, five, six players who feel they should be starters, and that creates sulks on the bench. So that's something that's difficult for Nagelsmann to deal with. But what he did really here is he got it right in the second half. He brought on Leon Goretzka, who has been coming back from injury, so they haven't been able to max him out. And when you've got Kimmich and Goretzka in the centre of midfield, I suspect it will be the same for Germany and Qatar. They're just a different proposition, and they were really, really good in the second half. I thought they've still got a few defensive issues to deal with, but I think when you have Kimmich and Goretzka in front of the defence, that makes a huge step towards solving those.
Out of Bayern and Barca, which of those two teams are more likely to progress to the final stages of the competition from what you've seen this week?
I think it's still Bayern. I think Bayern still sort of seem to have more about them. I think when you talk about what Andy said with them being unbeaten start as this sort of disaster, and I think when you sort of consider that they are the ones who are sort of trying to remodel post Lewandowski, and they're still able to get these results in Europe, I think you've got to be optimistic about the capacity in that team for even more development going forward.
Libera la difesa della Bayern, polo terzo, contropiede, scatta Zickler, solo Zickler, Zickler, desiste il Guerra, Zickler, supera Casillas, Zickler, rete! 4-1, è un trionfo per il Bayern.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
In France, in PSG of all places, there is a soap opera, I think it is in any case, that is continuing, and it stars their main man, Kylian Mbappe. What is the latest in this soap opera, Andy?
Well, it turns out that the NBA influence on football is never-ending, Don. And it's been revealed this week that when we had that huge fuss on the last PSG home game of the season, where Kylian Mbappe signed a new contract, a sort of surprise new contract, I suppose, to 2025, they maybe put the wrong number on the back of the shirt, because it turns out it's not a three-year deal. It's a 2+1 deal. So it could be a three-year deal, but it's two guaranteed years, and 1 year is optional. The option being Kylian Mbappe's prerogative. So basically what we are is in a situation where at the end of this season, presuming he were to opt out, and why wouldn't he, even if he wanted to stay, because he could negotiate himself a better deal on more money on the prices of 2 years from now, or a year and a half from now. He is a year away from being a free agent again at the end of this season. So that means that the speculation starts all over again. So PSG thought it was locked down, and maybe it's not.
Nikki, isn't this bonkers?
I think it's as Andy said, it's possibly revealing. It's possibly a shift in the direction of football. And I think when we talk about that, like, we need to really emphasize that this isn't a shift in the football for all players. But I think that football is ever more trending towards power being concentrated in the hands of a very, very small number of super elite players. And that is because those players carry such a weight in marketing value nowadays. They carry such a weight in your sort of social media branding and your ability to sort of connect with the kids, as it were. But I've talked about this on the podcast before, and it was sort of the easiest example I have, I'm sorry to repeat it, but is when Cristiano Ronaldo joined Juventus, and you saw things like their sort of Instagram engagement go from something like the 20th in Europe to the first overnight. It's because one player has that level of power. And I think Mbappe is absolutely the number one in this category for the next few years going forward. I think now that Messi and Ronaldo are sort of reaching the last phases of their career, and Neymar perhaps has never become quite that level. Not that he hasn't been brilliant, but that level that Mbappe seems to be heading towards. Mbappe is going to be one of the most powerful people in football in terms of branding that there is. And so, of course, he shouldn't sign contracts that tie him anywhere for too long. He should always keep the power in his hands, because he can, because every club in the world is going to want him regardless. So why surrender that power to the football club?
And if Mbappe is number one, arguably Erling Haaland, or Haaland to give him the anglicisation of his name, is number two, though, Andy, because it seems like there's a clause in his contract as well that perhaps Manchester City weren't too clear on.
Well, rumoured but never confirmed. With that said, that was the same with his Dortmund get-out clauses from when he signed his contract there after joining from Salzburg. There was certainly speculation that he had asked for a clause to be included in his Manchester City contract, a release clause that would kick into gear after, say, 2 years, for example. A similar clause at a higher value to the one that he signed in the contract with Dortmund. And I think what's interesting about this, to briefly go back to the Mbappe angle of it, and clearly, you know, that could change the whole parameters of the PSG sporting project. I think that's another discussion for another time. But I think when you look at that sort of ability for one of the best players in the world to have that power to do that, and not like late on in their career either. We're talking about like maybe pre-peak of these guys, well, presumably pre-peak of these guys, for them to not lock themselves into a mega bucks 6-year deal or 7-year deal or whatever, but to say, you know what, I back myself to work with the market forces here, and I take the power away from even the biggest clubs in the game. And in terms of money, PSG and Manchester City are the biggest clubs in the game. You know, there's no doubt about that. But actually, they're sitting and waiting for what these guys want to do. Now, I guess on a much, much smaller scale, we've seen that with, say, Jesse Lingard signing a 1-year deal with Nottingham Forest rather than going to West Ham for like 2 or 3 or whatever this summer. Like that idea of like going for higher wages in the short term, but taking, I guess, what past players would have seen as a bit of a risk with your future. I mean, even with Mbappe and Haaland, clearly if they stop playing tomorrow, they'd still have plenty of money. So, you know, it's not the risk that it might be for other players with lesser earning potential. But it's still a great show of faith in yourself that you're going to not only maintain your form, but build on your form, become bigger and better. And it's about what Nicky was saying, I think, about, you know, retaining control of your destiny, retaining control of your brand, and making sure you're constantly reevaluated and properly rewarded. Incidentally, maybe we've seen a little bit of this, Nicky, with Marco Verratti. Because Marco Verratti, I think if you put it all together, he signed something like 5-6 contract extensions since he's been at PSG. Now, he's constantly like been able to bring his wages up to the market value. But on the other hand, when he wanted to try and force his way out to Barcelona a couple of years ago, he couldn't do it.
You've mentioned Verratti, and I have this most wonderful description of him I got in my head from listening to an Italian language podcast called La Riserva the other day, and they were talking about Verratti at PSG and describing him as the like almost like the central nervous system of PSG, because otherwise no one else is communicating between the defence and the attack. It's just him sort of shuttling the messages back and forward between the two, and I enjoyed that a lot. But yeah, you know, he's a great case for that. I mean, actually the one that was in my head, Andy, is as you were talking about, is Rafael Leao at Milan, because he's gone into the last 2 years of his contract, and I think he's a great example of a young player who's got huge potential, hasn't sort of, you know, he hasn't yet got incredible numbers. He's got good numbers, but he's someone whose potential is there for everyone to see. And he's gone into the last 2 years of his contract. Could have, well, there were offer of around 100 million euros coming Milan's way from Chelsea and in the summer, and they turned it down and he didn't kick up a stink. And I think that's because, again, now he knows that, having gone through that transfer window, the power just comes more and more to him. And I think that that dynamic of sort of putting faith in yourself among young players is going to be really fascinating to watch. I do think, again, though, it's a very, very small select group that can exert that sort of influence in these situations. Leao, again, is someone who's in his early 20s and already drawing 100 million euro bids.
Time, Nicky and Andy, to recommend a game of the week. Should we start with you, Andy?
You know what? I'm going to go Germany again. I feel like I'm going Germany a lot recently, but I feel it's inevitable this weekend. The Rafia Derby, the first one in a couple of years due to Schalke's relegation and now re-promotion. Dortmund versus Schalke. Saturday afternoon, so you'll find a way to watch it if you really want to, I'm sure. I don't think I'm letting any genie out of the bottle by saying that. But it's going to be really interesting because Dortmund played most of a good game at Manchester City. And then I thought Edin Terzic, a coach who is under a little bit of examination at the moment, I think it's fair to say, you know, there's no real playing identity there. And it does feel like a disparate collection of very good individuals sometimes. I think he dropped the coaching ball in the last 20 minutes of that game against Manchester City. They sat back and gave City the ability to open them up. And they were absolutely battered at Leipzig last weekend. And then you have Schalke, who won their first Bundesliga game in over 400 days last weekend in beating rock bottom Bochum, or rock Bochum, if you like, who's still not registered a single point. So, you know, there's so many great moments in this derby. We go back a couple of years ago when Peter Bosz was in charge of Dortmund. They were 4-0 up at half time and it ended up being a 4-4 draw. There's loads going on here and Dortmund really cannot afford to not win it. I guess the food recommendation, we've been through a lot of vintage German dishes in recent weeks. You know what? Saturday afternoon, go wild. Go Mexican, I say.
Yeah, and you deserve a yellow card for that, Rock Bottom. But anyway, Nicky, can you recommend a game? Can you recommend a game that you don't have to be a teenager to find a way to watch? If you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's an easy choice for me this week because it's a Milan against Napoli on Sunday night, 7:45 PM UK time. You got a nice warm up for that one as well, by the way, because the afternoon game at 5 o'clock UK time before that is Roma against Atalanta. Atalanta unbeaten and joint top of the table at the moment. So we've talked plenty about Roma and Mourinho, but that's a nice warm up. But yeah, look, Milan against Napoli. Napoli, everyone has been watching them in Europe. They are a really, really fun team to watch at the moment. I think what's astonishing about them at the moment is their depth. I'm certain you'll see significant changes even from the team that beat Rangers in the Champions League, and the sort of range of options they've got to play with up front, even without Victor Osimhen, is really fun. Milan are going to be without Leao, which is a big blow because he was sent off for a high boot last weekend. But still, this is two title contenders going at it early in the season. So for me, that's an easy choice for game of the week. And I know you want the food pairing as always. Well, I was reading an interview this week with Matteo Politano, who was, of course, the first goal scorer against Rangers. And Politano said, he was asked where his favourite food was, and he said, pizza, pasta and potatoes with provola, which is a type of cheese. So I say, have at it, get your carbs in and live like a professional footballer.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.